Baseball Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkus, and along with Mike Wilkening, it is our pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we do our best to bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, both on the field and off.
We assess whether some teams have helped themselves in the offseason, plus we debate the NFL's best offense.
It's all just ahead on this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkus, the publisher and editor at PFW. I am joined in the studio as my co-host this week by senior editor Mike Wilkening, and we're going to be joining a good part of the Pro Football Weekly editorial department as we take you around the NFL. It is the off season. Whatever way we hear it, there is to report. We will report. We'll do some feature information for you as well. A lot of teams in OTAs right now trying to figure out where they could be headed in the 2012 season. And we're going to start with associate editor Eli Cabron, who covers the AFC West. And Eli, the defending champion, Denver Broncos. That sounds funny. An 8-8 defending champion who didn't play a lot of offense last year. Hopes to do better with a new quarterback, Peyton Manning. And I want to talk a little bit about each of your four clubs, what they've done so far to get better, where they may not be quite as good, and what their prospects are. Clearly, Peyton Manning is what the Denver Broncos have done to get better. How much better does he immediately make them?
I think he's a huge upgrade, Hub. I think, obviously, Tim Tebow had some success there in a run-based offense, but that's not really what John Fox and offensive coordinator Mike McCoy envisioned when they took over last year. And now with Peyton Manning, to have the kind of quarterback that they can run the scheme that they would like, Willis McGahee will see a decreased amount of carries, but that probably will serve him better too. But expect Manning to run that similar offense that he ran with the Colts for so many years, that wide open attack. And you got young receivers like Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker. They think that their offense can be really good. And then their defense kind of grew a bit last year, still had some struggles, obviously, in that playoff loss to the Patriots. But guys like Von Miller, Elvis Dumervil, and DJ Williams, when he comes off suspension, they got the makings of a really good defense also. So the Broncos are pretty comfortable and confident of where they can go, assuming Manning and his health is all right.
The Broncos should be confident, Eli, obviously, with Manning in the fold. But what are a couple red flags with this team as you look at the roster? If Manning stays healthy and if everything goes well, what are still a couple of ways they still could get beat in this division?
The secondary, I think, Mike, is a big concern for them. They face a lot of good quarterbacks this year. Their schedule gets a lot tougher, and they kind of reworked their secondary. Tracy Porter and Drayton Florence were added as cornerbacks along with Champ Bailey, but none of them are really in their prime anymore. I mean, Porter, I guess, in terms of age, is in his prime, but he's never really been a consistent playmaker. And then at safety, they lost Brian Dawkins, who's retired. They replaced him with Mike Adams, but Quinton Carter is going to step into the starting lineup. There's still a lot of question marks there. And then on the defensive line also, they've lost some pieces and really need to make some changes. So I would say overall on the defense, the secondary and the line, there's big concerns on both of those spots. And then the schedule, they just face so many good teams that even if they're playing well, they could lose a lot of games. So the Broncos have to bring it every week given who they face.
Well, Eli, and I'll give you guys another way I think they could get beat in this division. I think Kansas City and San Diego are probably better teams. So let's talk about them. That's just my opinion. I want to hear what you think. And I want to start with Kansas City. It is a fact in the NFL over the last 15 years, at least five, possibly as many as six or seven teams that were not in the playoffs last year will be this year. I believe the Chiefs are one of them. I'm tempted to pick the Chiefs as my AFC preseason Super Bowl pick. That's how strong I am on them, mainly because of injured players that they're getting back. But also, I think some really savvy moves to plug holes where they had to, both with veterans and free agency and through the draft.
I agree, Hub. I think the Chiefs are right there with the Broncos. I mean, you talk about the injured players that they get back. That's Jamaal Charles at running back, Eric Berry at strong safety, Tony Moiaki at tight end, and then Matt Cassel at quarterback. That's four key players that they did not have at the end of last season when they made a run to the playoffs behind Kyle Orton. Now they get those four guys back. They also added some great depth, Peyton Hillis, Kevin Boss, backup quarterback, and Brady Quinn. So they've got some nice pieces. They did really well in the draft, I thought. Dontari Poe, the first pick, should start right away. So the Chiefs have all the makings of a team that can challenge the Broncos. The big question for them is Matt Cassel. He's had a good year followed by bad year. And last year was a down year after they went to the playoffs in 2010. So if he can rebound and play well again, I think the Chiefs can win the division.
For years, the Chargers have been the favorites in this division. They're not this year. But if they are to get back to the top of this division, Eli, what are the steps they're going to have to take? What blueprint are they going to have to use to be able to win the West this year?
Well, Phillip Rivers has to take care of the ball. Last year, so many fourth quarter turnovers and mistakes. He just really couldn't be counted on down the stretch when they needed him, which is rare for a great quarterback like him, but he just had an off year. He never came out and said he was hurt, but a lot of scouts and observers thought that something looked wrong with Phillip Rivers last year. So hopefully he's back to his top performance. And then their secondary. They were dead last in the league on third downs last year. They couldn't get off the field, couldn't get a pass rush. They think that first-round pick, Melvin Ingram, will help them a lot in that category. They also added Jared Johnson, the outside linebacker from the Ravens, and Atari Bigby, the safety. So they added some more pieces on their defense. Hopefully that helps them. But I think the big key for San Diego is Phillip Rivers. I think he really needs to return to being in that elite group of quarterbacks.
Ironically, we talk about which of these teams. The fact is, three of them were 8-8, and only the Chiefs, who I like the best, were 7-9. So as we get to the Oakland Raiders, new coach, lack of depth, more defections via free agency, but can this team contend in the West as well?
I think they can contend. It all goes back to the quarterbacks, like we've mentioned with the last three teams. But the Carson Palmer thing, he was just so rusty last year when he came in. I don't think he was expecting to be traded. I think he thought he was going to hold out all year, and then he suddenly got thrown into the starting lineup with the Raiders, and he just looked off. I think a year of preparation for him, an offseason of preparation, working with his receivers, I think that will help them a lot. I think Dennis Allen should probably help the defense. I think they were undisciplined last year. Hugh Jackson really never been in control of a defense before, so Dennis Allen, a defensive-minded coach, should help. But I just don't know if they have the horses to keep up with the other three teams. I think Darren McFadden has to stay healthy. They have to be more disciplined. They can't set records for penalties again like they did last year. So a lot of things have to work in the Raiders' favor, but I think they're clearly the fourth best of the four, but that doesn't mean that they can't compete and make a run and beat some of these teams ahead of them.
All right, Eli, thank you very much. That is Eli Cabron, Associate Editor of Pro Football Weekly. The AFC West up for grabs. We've got more NFL offseason news and notes right after this quick commercial break. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial every week. 52 weeks a year, we visit and talk with you about the most popular sport in America, the National Football League, news, notes, scoops, rumors, everything before it happens. This week, we're talking about a bunch of clubs at this point in the offseason as they're in their OTAs or just wrapping them up or just getting started. Have they gotten better? Have they taken a step back? What are their prospects for 2012? Dan Parr is associate editor who covers both the Chicago Bears and the NFC South for us. We're going to focus on the South right now, and I'm going to kind of go bottom up a little bit, Dan, because I don't think any team has had more activity this offseason in the NFL than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
You're right about that, definitely in free agency. They were the big spenders, and they came away with three high-impact players. Vincent Jackson's going to change things for them in the passing game. Carl Nix gives them arguably the best guard tandem in the league when you pair him with Davin Joseph. You know, they went out and got Eric Wright to give themselves a little more depth at cornerback, too. So you look at that, and then also what they did in the draft, two picks in the first round, getting Mark Barron come in and be the staple on that back end at safety, and then also getting Doug Martin, addressing a need that was just severe for them. They had to get better there. LeGarrette Blount is not a guy who you want to be your every down back. When you look at all that, it's hard to say that this team isn't going to be better. And, you know, they're in a very tough division. Are they ready to make a huge jump in Greg Schiano's first season as head coach? I'm not ready to say that, but this is a team that's going to be highly, you know, much more competitive than they were in 2011.
Well, and here's the two things that I think people will really focus on. The quarterback, Josh Freeman, he was the flavor of the month as recently as a year ago. Obviously, missing the offseason with the lockout did not help him. Can he take a step back this year? The big difference between him was interceptions. Didn't throw many his first year. Last year, he threw too many. And then Greg Schiano, who, Dan, I'm not sure that a lot of NFL fans realize, they think of him as the Rutgers coach and the Miami defense coordinator. Greg Schiano made his bones in the NFL. He started in coaching under Dave Wannstedt with the Chicago Bears and then went to college football. So it's not like this is something that's new to him.
No, absolutely not. You know, he's produced a lot of NFL talent while he was a coach at Rutgers, including Ray Rice. So that you know, he knows what he's getting into here. understands the game very well at the pro level. Bill Belichick is a guy who's been a big supporter of his and who he's no doubt picked the brain of in the past few months as he's gotten prepared to get back into the league. So he's not a newbie. And, you know, you look at the, you know, his dominant theme has always been defense and a tough, hard running game. So the defense is where they really need to make the biggest improvements. And I think getting Gerald McCoy back healthy, their three technique, guy they picked very early in the draft a couple of years ago, just hasn't been able to stay healthy. If he can get healthy, if that defensive line gets better, they're really going to need it to. That could be the biggest difference for this team.
Dan, the Carolina Panthers finished strongly last year, and Cam Newton's play at quarterback certainly was eye-catching. But this is a team that was 28th in defense. And, you know, really, when you look at them, adding Luke Kuechly in round one in this draft, getting John Beeson back, is that going to be enough to turn around a defense that really needs to take a step forward in this tough division?
In addition to that, they're going to need a lot better play from their defensive line, and particularly at defensive tackle. You know, they're counting on Ron Edwards, a defense tackle they signed last offseason that missed the entire year with the triceps there. They're counting on him to come back healthy and play. They're counting on a couple of rookies they drafted in 2011 and Terrell McClain and Deion Fua to come back and be big-time players. So they are going to need more than just a healthy John Beeson and the addition of Kuechly, although that helps dramatically. You know, they also would love to see Thomas Davis coming off three ACL tears come back and be healthy. You know, Ron Rivera's bread and butter is defense, so this is a test for him. You know, that they were pretty embarrassed with what happened to them last season on defense, and injury certainly played a role, but you'd like to have a better showing than that. And so they think they have better depth at linebacker, but still, I'm not convinced that this is going to be a defense that when you're going up against the likes of the Falcons, the Saints, and improved Buccaneers offense 6 games out of the season, that you're going to have a group that's ready to really go stride for stride for those type of attacks.
Dan, I'm a little perplexed by the Atlanta Falcons. I love the Asante Samuel trade. You get him for a 7th-round pick, and you know, assuming you got the cap space, and obviously they did. Him and Dante Robinson make a really nice pair at cornerback. But Curtis Lofton has been the leading tackler on that team since he got there day one, and he gets away via free agency to the Saints. Wasn't a bank breaker. You know, he's a guy who's been relatively healthy at the position, and really was kind of the focal point of that defense.
You saw a shift in philosophy, I think, defensively this offseason for the Falcons. You know, Curtis Lofton had been a huge part of what they've done since 2008, really, when Mike Smith first stepped in. They're going to go now. They'd like to see Akeem Dent, a rookie last season, come in and win that job. He's competing against Lopatupu to replace Lofton. But with Mike Nolan coming in on defense, the emphasis now, right, was on improving the secondary and being able to do more against these high-octane passing attacks that they're going to have to face most weeks of the season. So when you have Brent Grimes coming back on the franchise tag, you have Asante Samuel in there, and you also have Dante Robinson, you know, they think they have three pretty good corners that can make plays and are going to, you know, significantly change things for a defense that was just not good enough last season. It was good against the run, but against the pass, where there were some real issues. They're going to need better pass rush from John Abraham, who re-signed in the offseason. Guy's getting up there in years, coming off kind of a down year. The combination of him having a bounce back year and the upgrades at cornerback, suddenly there's a whole new ballgame for this defense.
All right, Dan, very quickly, because we're short on time, we've talked so much about the New Orleans Saints, I don't know what there is to add, but let's assume, just for purposes of this conversation, everything works out with the coaching. We don't know how, but let's assume it works out and the coaching is good enough. Bottom line, you've lost Carl Nix and Robert Meacham. You've added Ben Grubbs. You've probably lost Jonathan Vilma for the season, and you've added Curtis Lofton. Is the team as good, better, more question marks? Should they be the team to beat in the NFC South again?
I consider them that team. They certainly are a ton of question marks. Fairly unprecedented situation facing this team, given the bounty punishments, although, you know, we haven't heard final rulings yet with a lot of legal proceedings playing out in front of us. But, you know, the Drew Brees staying away from OTAs is a concern. You know, I think if everything works out by mid-July and he's back and ready for training camp, then there's really no harm done. But, you know, that remains to be seen. So with the talent they have really across the board and the improvements, I think, even if Jonathan Vilma is not there, that they have at linebacker, with Steve Spagnuolo coming in to run this defense, I still look at this team as the best in the NFC South.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We will talk to Dan down the road. Right now, we're going to take another quick commercial break and move on as we go around the NFL, find out who's better, who's worse, and what's going on in OTAs. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We now welcome in Associate Editor Arthur Arkish, and Arthur covers the AFC South. And Arthur, kind of a busy week in Jacksonville. It looks now like much ado about nothing, but for a few minutes there, both the city of Jacksonville, the mayor's office, and the Jacksonville Jaguars and new owner Shad Khan were a little upset with each other. Tell us what that was all about.
Yeah, it looked like things were going to be potentially ugly. Obviously, the Jaguars are a team that everyone always wants to jump to conclusions as a team that's on the way out of Jacksonville. So when news broke last week that the city had sent the Jaguars a letter letting them know that they defaulted on their lease, that certainly raised some red flags, certainly to Shad Khan as much as anyone, who responded by sending a letter, a scathing letter, I might add, back to the city and back to the new mayor saying that he was perplexed, he was shocked that they had been in compliance on every front, and that if they were attempting to get the ball rolling on kicking them out of the stadium, that the Jaguars needed to know right away. They're getting ready to plan on training camp and getting the season rolling. And I think that was enough for Jacksonville to realize that it had made a mistake, that someone in the mayor's office had sent the letter without knowing about an amendment that was in the lease, that the Jaguars were in fact in full compliance. The city was apologetic, and it appears now that everything is okay, but certainly interesting and probably pretty frightening for some Jaguars fans who love their team in Jacksonville.
All right, Arthur, we're not going to get to all 32 teams, but we're talking about a lot of clubs around the league as to whether they're better, whether they're worse, what's happened during the offseason so far. And as we look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, obviously with Mike Mularkey there and nowhere to go but up, you know, it's not so much better or worse, but figuring out what they're going to do next. And I guess the big question in Jacksonville is Mike Mularkey going to give Blaine Gabbert, who was drafted to be the franchise, a chance to be the franchise, or should we assume that if not on opening day early on, that Chad Henne will be the starting quarterback of the Jaguars?
No, everything that we're hearing is that Mularkey is absolutely going to give Gabbert a chance to be successful. Of course, he is not really, there's no ties there because Gabbert's from the old regime, but he is impressed with the young kid and thinks that he does have a chance to be a solid NFL starter. So yeah, he's getting all the first team reps. This isn't a quarterback competition. This is Gabbert's job to lose, and early indications are that he seems to be a lot more comfortable in his own skin. He seems to be a bit more confident. Now, whether that, you know, turns into more production on the field, we'll just have to wait and see.
The Tennessee Titans, Arthur, were 9-7 last year. I think, you know, maybe surprised some people to how they played. But they've got an interesting decision at quarterback with Matt Hasselbeck and the youngster Jake Locker. How do you think that's going to play out? And with regards to Tennessee's stock this year, are they on the rise?
I'll go with the first part first. Unlike in Jacksonville, there is absolutely a full-fledged quarterback competition in Nashville. Our sources have been saying for quite some time and continue to believe that Matt Hasselbeck is going to be the guy initially. If you look at the Titans' early schedule, it's pretty treacherous, and there are some who believe that even if Jake Locker does appear to be the guy, I mean, clearly he's the future, but even if he appears to be the guy now, throwing him into the fire against the Texans, against the Lions, against some pretty good teams may not be the best way to get him started. So the belief is that Hasselbeck will hold off the youngster, and with a better running game, Chris Johnson's expected to rebound a little bit. And with assuming that Kenny Britt's going to be healthy returning, they obviously added Kendall Wright. There should be plenty of weapons to work with. I think the defense is the bigger question. They added Cameron Wembley. I'm not sure that that addition offsets the loss of Cortland Finnegan, who was clearly their best player last year. So I think a lot of the questions are going to come on defense and what they're able to do in pass defense specifically.
All right, Arthur, I'm a little short on time, and I want to get to both your remaining clubs. With the Houston Texans, it's pretty quick. They're the defending champs. They could be a better team, but I'm not sure they're better with their offseason moves. As you now look at D'Amico, Ryan's gone, Eric Winston gone, you know, Maryhill Williams gone. Are they a better team than they were at the end of the season last year?
Well, I don't know if I could say they're a better team. No, I mean, I think they, they had a solid draft. They bolstered the wide receiving core, but you hit the nail on the head. The biggest question is going to be, how do they replace two starters on the right side of that offensive line? They believe they have the candidates in-house in Antoine Caldwell and Rashad Butler, both guys who have starting experience. But when you have a zone blocking unit like that, one that was as good as any in the league last year because they were so cohesive and had so much synergy, I think you absolutely have to be a little bit concerned. The loss of Mario Williams, he's a special special talent, but that defense didn't drop off without him last year, and I think they're going to do just fine under Wade Phillips now having a full offseason to get to work.
Very quickly, the Indianapolis Colts completely rebuilding the offense, and defensively, two players to build around in Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, and they're both going to be playing new positions.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, and you know, when you talk about Robert Mathis, he's a guy who you know, is certainly not, his strength isn't stopping the run, but he seems to be a little bit more able to make that adjustment to stand up and be an outside linebacker. The real question is going to be Dwight Freeney. What we're hearing about these two is that they're still obviously the centerpiece of the defense. They're going to have a chance to apply a lot of pressure. They're going to come from different places on the field, which could make it a little trickier for offenses to game plan. But we'll just have to wait and see if they can hold the point, if they can occasionally drop back in coverage. There's a lot of question marks.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. We take another quick commercial break here, and then we're back with more NFL news, notes, scoops, and rumors. It's all right here on The Way We Hear It on Pro Football Weekly. Yes, it is. I'm Hub Arkish, Mike Wilkening alongside, hosting this week as we bring you all the news there is fit to print, talk about, have fun with in the National Football League this week. We now welcome in Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane, and Kevin's main beat is the AFC East. And Kevin, the Buffalo Bills have been very, very busy during the offseason. They made the biggest splash in free agency with Mario Williams, a somewhat controversial, I won't say controversial, but a little surprising first-round pick in Stephen Gilmore, where people think maybe they reached a little bit. Is this team better by addition, worse by subtraction, somewhere in the middle?
No, I think this team's absolutely better. I mean, their biggest need was pass rush. They address it with Mario Williams and opposite him in Mark Anderson, a guy who had a pretty good year for the Patriots last season. They need to upgrade the secondary. They get Stephon Gilmore, who is going to challenge to start on the outside. You know, they're going young at cornerback, and they really hope that he's ready to start day one. They upgraded on the offensive line by getting Cordy Glenn in the second round. And when you look at the free agency situation, they didn't lose any big players. The only player they didn't really re-sign was Roscoe Parrish, and that wasn't a surprise at all. They re-signed Stevie Johnson. You know, the year before they re-signed Kyle Williams. They keep Kirk Morrison, Brian Scott. So they kept a lot of guys from a team that showed a lot of spark at the beginning of last year and added to some of their weaknesses.
Well, Kevin, the Bills have probably closed the gap on the top of the AFC East, but I think we can all agree that the Patriots are still the team to beat in that division. They've got an interesting situation at wide receiver. They cut Anthony Gonzalez this week, but they've got, it seems like, a ton of options at that position. How do you think everything is going to shake out?
Well, I think, obviously, Welker's in. Brandon Lloyd, who's been very impressive in OTAs, he's solid. Jabbar Gaffney was very good when he was there as a role player a few years ago, and I think Tom Brady's happy to have him back. And we know Tom Brady loves Deion Branch, so Brady's going to vouch to keep Branch on the roster. So there's your four receivers, and keep in mind, Aaron Hernandez is essentially another receiver, and they use their backs out of the as receivers as well. So I think Dante Stallworth and Chad Ochocinco very much on the roster bubble. Then you got to look at guys like Julian Edelman and Matthew Slater. They're kind of guys that Mr. Versatility, those two. They're very valued on special teams. We saw Edelman play corner last year, so I think it's really going to come down to Ochocinco versus Stallworth. I believe they're going to keep Edelman and Slater, although those two guys, keep an eye on them as OTAs and training camp go forward, and it's possible that neither Stallworth nor Ochocinco makes the roster, but they certainly have a wealth of talent at wide receiver. That's definitely not a weakness for that team.
Well, Kevin, one of your teams, the Dolphins, made some interesting news this week. They're the Hard Knocks team. It may be a little bit out of left field, but, you know, they're an interesting team. Obviously, a quarterback competition. They've got some young players that are maybe on the rise. You know, talk about how this experience might help or hinder them, and who are some players that to watch maybe in this Hard Knock series that could get highlighted that are interesting guys?
Well, you know, Joe Philbin said yesterday the interesting thing for him as a new head coach, he'll get to watch some of these clips of Hard Knocks, and he said he'll use it as a better way to know his team, to get to know his players better. And, you know, whether or not this was his idea, which is what he is claiming, that it was a football decision, not a Stephen Ross decision, you know, believe that or not, that's what he is saying. You know, so I think for him as a new head coach, he can really use it as an extra way to evaluate some of his players. From an HBO standpoint, as you mentioned, they have the three-player quarterback competition, which includes a first-rounder in Ryan Tannehill. Players to watch, I think for the Dolphins, they really want to, you know, get some positive publicity and show they have some young, up-and-coming players. Brian Hartline, I think, has an opportunity to have a good season this year at wide receiver. Jared Odrick is a guy on the defensive line the team is very excited about, thinking about being the next great pass rusher off from DN. And Cameron Wake is a really unknown player from around the league. You know, people know that he's a great pass rusher, but I think a lot of people don't know him. They obviously have Dansby and Reggie Bush, known guys, known talkative players, but I think there's some young players in this team, you know, Mike Pouncey included in that as well, that fans around the NFL are going to get to know a little bit better this summer.
Kevin, let's be clear on something, and I like Joe Philbin, but if Steve Ross didn't want to be on Hard Knocks, he didn't have to talk him out of it. He just needed to say no. It's his toy, you know? So
right.
I understand why Philbin is trying to do good PR for the owner. We got about 20, 30 seconds left. New York Jets needed to get better at right tackle, decided they'd bring in a backup and let last year's guys, Wayne Hunter and Vlad Decassi, struggle for the position. They think Tony Sperano will make them better. Safety is an issue. Lerone Landry, we don't know if he's healthy. Jeremiah Bell, he's going to play in the box. Are they better, or are we still scratching our heads about what the Jets are doing?
I think we're still scratching our heads, and we said the same thing last offseason when they made a bunch of moves, but they really didn't get a whole lot better on the field. Safety's still an issue. You mentioned right tackle. You know, the pressure is all, it's all on Mark Sanchez. It all hinges on him, and that defense needs to get better. If that defense plays up to its potential, this will be a better team. But right now, when you look just at the moves they made, they're no better than they were last year when they missed the playoffs.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Kevin and Arthur are going to join us again in the next segment as we tell you about the PFW poll at ProFootballWeekly.com. Who's the best offense in the NFL? Thank you all so much for listening. We want to thank all of you also for joining us regularly at ProFootballWeekly.com. If you're not a regular visitor to our website, please become one. Traffic up over 200% over last year. Some of that due, of course, to the fact we were in a lockout last year, but most of it due to the popularity of the NFL and our website, a great place to spend your time again, ProFootballWeekly.com. And one of the things we're having fun with this offseason is we've set off on a quest to find the best offense in the National Football League. We had our editorial board give us the top eight. We seeded them 1 through 8, eliminated 4 in the semifinals, in the quarterfinals. And one of the matchups we had, which surprised me, was the Detroit Lions versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I actually argued the Lions. Eric Edholm, our senior editor, argued the Eagles. But personally, I probably would have voted for the Eagles. The Lions were a big winner, 58% of the vote to 42% for the Eagles. And I can see how that could go either way, but then we got to the semifinals and the Detroit Lions took on the Green Bay Packers. Now, to me, I'm going to lose. Look at the results. They play twice every year. The Green Bay Packers, I think, probably should be a finalist for best offense in the NFL. But once again, the Lions knocked off the Packers. Now, let's call this what it is. This is not a scientific poll. I love Lions fans, and obviously you guys are stuffing the ballot box at ProFootballWeekly.com, which is fine. That's your entitlement. And yet beyond that, it is a good offense, Mike. I can't take them over the Packers, but you cover the Lions. How do we explain this?
I think it's twofold. I think it's a measure of what they did last season. I mean, Matthew Stafford exceeded 5,000 yards passing in his first full season. Calvin Johnson maybe flat out won a couple of games for them. And it's also a potential of what they could become. Could Matthew Stafford become even better? I mean, obviously, it's a loaded offense. So I think it's what they are and what they could become.
We currently are awaiting the Lions' opponent in the finals as the New England Patriots are taking on the New Orleans Saints. And, Kevin, the Patriots, one of your teams, I think they stack up with everybody. I think the Saints were probably the favorite going into this competition. We should have those results shortly. Why are the Patriots in the semifinals?
Well, I think if you look at the pass catchers they have, you know, Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham, you can make an argument it's a wash, but the Patriots have Aaron Hernandez, you know, who would be the starting tight end of most teams in the NFL. Then you look at Wes Welker, the best slot receiver in the game. They added Brandon Lloyd, Jabbar Gaffney to that wide receiving core. You know, obviously they got Tom Brady, but I think one thing a lot of people forget about is that offensive line, which is obviously a big reason the Patriots' offense has been so good for so long. They're able to have such a good offensive line in pass blocking and run blocking. The one edge I will give the New Orleans, which might be the reason the Saints move on, is running back. You know, there's a lot of questions for the Patriots running back. They haven't really need to have a star running back, but the Saints definitely have the edge in the backfield.
Arthur, life has been a little tough in your AFC South on offense, although the Houston Texans, the defending division champs, probably would have been in this competition if Matt Schaub had been healthy all year long last year. He will be healthy this year. We'll see if the Texans can slide in. But since Kevin is on the Patriots side, I'm not saying he's choosing sides, but that's his ball club. I'm going to ask you from the Saints' perspective, one of the things that we've heard in the debates between Eric and I is the question about how will the offseason problems, the coaching questions, how will they impact the Saints' offense this year?
Yeah, I think it's a great question for sure. And, you know, fortunately, Drew Brees, if there was ever a guy who could afford to be without, you know, their play caller and all the other, beyond the loss of Sean Payton, just all the, you know, the negative headlines that the Saints have made, quite frankly, it probably is Drew Brees. So I don't expect a huge drop off, in that department. And then just to kind of, to pony on what, to piggyback on what Kevin said at the end there, the backfield is what is the difference for me anyway. You look at time of possession, the Saints had a clear edge over the, Patriots last year. Just have a few more weapons in the backfield and a few more ways to move the sticks just a couple more times a game.
Well, interesting thing about all of our finalists except for the New Orleans Saints, the New England Patriots 20th running the football, the Green Bay Packers 27th, the Detroit Lions 29th. Saints are a complete offense. They were 6th in the league running first passing. But I don't want to stuff the ballot box like those Lions fans. Why don't you guys all get to ProFootballWeekly.com? We've got to settle a winner between the Patriots and the Saints. We will then have a video debate for you as to who should be the winner between the Lions and that other finalist. And you can follow it all at ProFootballWeekly.com. As a matter of fact, a lot of fun video in all 6 of these matchups. So again, ProFootballWeekly.com to get your vote in. Right now, we take another quick commercial break. We're back with more news, notes, and the way we hear it around the NFL in just a moment. A little more NFC news with the Detroit Lions, some AFC North news. Mike Wilkening, who's co-hosting with me this week, covers all those ball clubs. And Mike, we start with the Detroit Lions. Jim Schwartz is trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, saying it hasn't been that bad. It's a few guys who've given a bad rep to a bunch of good guys. I'll give him that. But it's a lot of guys as NFL teams go with the off-the-field legal issues so far this year of Mekhi Lashore and Nick Fairley and Johnny Culbreth. And then you got Titus Young, who can't get out of the facility without punching somebody. Some people say sucker punching him. It has been a distracting offseason for the Detroit Lions,
to say the least. And, you know, the biggest concern vis-a-vis the regular season is what happens with regards to Nick Fairley and Mekhi Lashore from an NFL discipline standpoint. Now, Mekhi Lashore, 2 marijuana arrests, Nick Fairley, a marijuana arrest, and most recently, a driving under the influence and attempting to elude police arrest in Mobile County, Alabama. He's going to be arraigned on that on June 28th. So again, he faces discipline. Certainly Lashore could face potential discipline. These are guys that were counted upon to play roles this year. And, you know, again, I think they're going to be available for the bulk of the season. But we're talking about guys that were hurt last year as well. Lashore for the whole season, Fairley for a good chunk of the season with a foot injury. And now we're talking about, you know, potentially them missing a little bit of time as well. So you've got that, and then you sort of mix in the idea of Titus Young having to sort of work his way back with this team after the incident with Louis Delmas, reportedly. You know, it's a mess right now. But, you know, luckily for them, it's May. It's not, you know, not August, not September. It's not an in-season thing. That's about the only good thing I could say right now.
You know, Mike, the Cleveland Browns have a full-blown quarterback controversy, and unlike most quarterback controversies, it seems to be by the design of the football team. I mean, every time the head coach, the GM, or the president of football operations open their mouth, they push this competition further, say that Colt McCoy deserves a shot, he should be given a chance to earn the job. Brandon Whedon, who's the rookie who you would think would be behind McCoy, as they're saying the guy they hope will take the job. They're both getting first-team reps in practice. You know, I understand wanting to find the best quarterback, but is this really the best way to go about it in public?
Well, I think this is part and parcel with the focus on the league, the fact that we have OTAs with media access, the fact that every bit of news, I think, is talked about quite a bit. We're going to document everything that goes on in this. And yeah, the Browns have said publicly that, you know, this is a competition and all these things. But look, they drafted Brandon Whedon in round one. And you would tend to think that he would have a real good shot at winning this job. Colt McCoy played for 2 years. I don't think, you know, staked a real strong case to have the job going forward. Is he going to have a chance to compete in training camp? If he's, you know, if he's there, certainly. I think it's entirely possible. But I think at the end of the day, if Brandon Whedon kind of goes forward and shows some ability to be a starter, the intent was to make him the guy at some point, and it could be sooner than later in Cleveland.
Mike, one of the most puzzling things to me this offseason is how many folks have made the Cincinnati Bengals the flavor of the month, the flavor of the year. People keep talking about this improving young, talented roster. there's some young talent, but I don't get it. I mean, they've got a great wide receiver, and then the 2-3-4-5 jobs are wide open, and the talent may not be that great. Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis signing, nice signing. I don't think it's a slam dunk that he's better than Cedric Benson. And then I look over on defense, again, nice players, but not dominating players. And why is it that everybody's so high on the Bengals, quote, young talent?
I think, again, it's the idea of what they could become. The Andy Dalton, AJ Green connection was great last year, and Green is already a bona fide Pro Bowl receiver in this league. But I think what you mentioned is sort of a key point here. This is a team that I think from an offensive punch standpoint needs to get a little bit better. There are questions about that second receiver spot. Green Ellis, I think, is a good serviceable back, but I don't think he's a game breaker. This team's ability to make big plays on both sides of the ball, I think, is maybe going to tell the tale as to whether or not they can take a jump in this division.
Well, it will be interesting to watch. Of course, we rounded out with the Steelers and Ravens, always pretty solid ball clubs, not a lot of controversy there. Mike Wallace, the closest thing to a big story there, along with Ray Rice. We know those deals are going to get done. We do have to take one more quick commercial break here, but we've got more. Publishers Panel will be coming up right after these words.
The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Well, Mike, there was some news out of the NFL offices, or more accurately, out of the NFL Players Association offices earlier this week that I found a little bit shocking, not a major shock, and tremendously disappointing in that it was actually the NFLPA that announced that they and the league had agreed that the 2013 Pro Bowl would be played this year in Honolulu the week before the Super Bowl. Now, this comes on the heels of just a few weeks ago, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, saying, we have to take a hard look at this game and we may have to consider not playing it anymore. I thought for all the right reasons. The Pro Bowl stinks. I wish there was a better way to put it. You know, I'm happy for the people in Honolulu and Hawaii, one of my favorite states in the union, that they get this game and what it means to tourism and everything else. But as a football game, who cares? Who wants to watch it, particularly when these guys do what they did last year and make it a glorified touch game in which they weren't even trying to do that? Clearly the commissioner was concerned when he talked about it being embarrassing enough to the league that maybe they shouldn't continue it. Then everything went quiet for a few weeks, and then suddenly this announcement comes from the Players Association. Well, here's what it suggests to me. There is not a lot of love right now between the owners and the players. I think they threw the players a bone. I think this year, at least, they didn't want the players to lose the perk of the trip, the bonuses that come with it. They said, we're still going to deal with this down the road. Let's just put it aside right now as we deal with bigger issues. Let's keep a close eye on it and see if that's correct. Our thanks, as always, to Randy Meyer, our producer-engineer, and Syndication Networks, our home studio. Most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. Join us again next week, same time, same station, on Pro Football Weekly.